to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Pedalin Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Bicycle Talk, episode 413, to be broadcast Wednesday, September 18th, 2024, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host somewhere around here, the lovely Dr. Franz Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. We should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show on Facebook Live, you can contribute right down here below. Or you can also send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. All right, 9/11 was last Wednesday. Remember 9/11? Yeah, it's kind of a grim day is what it was. Almost everyone I know can remember where they were that day, September 11th, 2001, at 8:14 a.m. Why am I bringing this up on my rant? Well, I'll tell you why. Because it has all to do with this country's horrible dependency on oil. And that's just not a good thing, folks. It's just not a good thing at all. And so anyway, that's where it came from. That's what it's based on. After 9/11, instead of reducing our petroleum use, the American oil consumption went up as people drove more, bought larger, and more inefficient vehicles. It's just madness, given all the costs that we know that such choices incur. Why don't all Americans, or at least most, connect these issues? Anyone out there have a satisfactory answer? I'm looking for one right now. I have a satisfactory answer. Ride your bike. Ride your bike. This is Bicycle Talk. This is what we talk about. We talk about bicycles. We talk about bicycle advocacy here. We talk about why we should not be using the transportation that we're using right now as often as we do. We're very, very dependent upon our vehicles that have motors and internal combustion engines, and it's terrible. And, we need to do something about that. So anyway, bicycle is a great alternative. Okay, and then the other thing that's on my rant list: what happens to e-bikes and e-scooters in New York City? They're fish food. There's a green group that has pulled 410 scooters and e-bikes out of the Bronx River since July of 2023. What's going on? Talk about that a little more in the show. On a positive side, this Wednesday coming up, 2 days, will be week 4 of the CCAP cyclocross training races in Rocky Hill, Connecticut. And the Worlds are coming. Yeah, the World Championships. So who are the favorites? That could be interesting to see. I know that Mr. Pogacar is definitely looking at it. He's got his eyes set on the Worlds, and he is back. He won a race in Canada. He's in Canada right now racing his bike, and he's looking pretty good these days. Again, he's looking pretty good. It's just amazing. This man is just a phenomenon. Anyway, more in the show. And what else do we have here? Ron's Mechanical Minute and Tips for the Week. Okay, so this is kind of interesting. I thought it was interesting anyway. And it's, are e-bike kits worth it? So it's a good question. You know, sometimes, you know, some people are looking at buying an e-bike. It's already made. It's already set. It already has the motor. It has a hub motor. Or it has a bottom bracket motor or whatever. There's different types that are out there. But then there are other people that have bikes that they want to just convert over and make it into an e-bike. And so I've been exploring that possibility because I'm thinking that that might be a direction that I might go and trying to decide which is the best way to go. So I figured I would talk about this a little bit today on the show. And here we go. Now, if you can afford to buy a complete e-bike and get it all set up and ready to go for you, and you know, then that of course is a really nice option. And but you know, some people find that that could be not cost effective for them. So the idea here is maybe you might want to convert a bike you already have into an e-bike, which is definitely a possibility. Bear in mind that when you're adding this much weight onto an existing bicycle, that that bicycle has to be able to handle the extra weight that you will be applying to the bike, because you've got battery weight, you've got motor weight, you've got to have other things involved here. So the question is it worth it to do it? And there's cost analysis of e-bike conversion kits, initial investments, long-term savings, etc. A lot of different things. And this comes from a site that is actually based out of England. And but they, you know, they kind of really broke it down to converting your standard bike into an electric powerhouse, and you can get the perks of the electric bike without the hefty price tag. Whether you're a daily commuter, or you're looking to ease your ride or weekend, you know, or you're a weekend adventurer or whatever, this is kind of a cool thing that you can do. And you can convert over any kind of bike. The highest recommended bikes are probably going to be more mountain oriented, something that's pretty heavy duty because of, as I said earlier, the weight of the machine is going to be much, much heavier. So you're going to need some extra protection because of that. You're going to need a more protective tire and rim. And so that's a way to go. But it's not saying you can't do it on a road bike, because they make e-road bikes. There's lots of them out there. And so there are ways of using your, of taking an old bike, making sure that you do have proper clearances for everything that's necessary here. So the initial investment conversion kit prices for basic models, they can range anywhere from really inexpensive on Amazon up to quite a bit more. And you can go over $1,000 easily on a conversion kit. So that is definitely a cost factor. And that's a conversion kit, maybe not with the battery. So the battery could be extra, and that's something else you have to figure out is, you know, what are the options there as far as that goes? When you're getting a conversion kit, are you going to get it with a battery or without a battery? And, you know, it depends on who you're buying them from as to what you're going to get with your actual conversion kit. And then if you're having someone professionally install it for you, like a bike shop, first of all, go to the bike shop first and ask if they will do that. Don't just assume that they will. I know that there are a lot of shops that just don't even want to touch them. So before you do it, just check in if it's something that looks like it's beyond your capacity. If you are good with mechanical things and you work on your bicycle all the time, it's not a difficult thing to do. I've done a couple of them for friends, and it's not super hard. There are a couple of little tricks that you have to know about, because you have to be able to meter the amount of torque and power that's going out of the crankset on the bike to be able to have the e-assist work when you need it to work. So there's a few things there that you need to know about. But you may be looking at also additional accessories, like maybe you need to beef up the brake system, because now you've got a much heavier bike and you need a little bit heavier duty brake. If you have a bike that already has disc brakes on it, that's probably a good option on an e-bike, because e-bikes do have, again, the extra weight and the faster capacity. So you might want to take a look at that. Or you may have to also add a rack onto the back of the bike to be able to handle holding the battery. There's different types of batteries. There's so many different options out there. You can get a battery that will convert over and clip into bottle cage bosses. They have actual structures that bolt onto the bottle cage itself. Now you're going to lose a bottle cage on that too, so you have to understand that you're not going to have your ability to put a water bottle down there any longer. You're going to have to put it somewhere else, or maybe if you're lucky, the battery won't be too terribly big, and you can put the bottle cage on the seat tube, and you can use that to hold your water bottle. But there is a strong chance that you're not going to have a lot of room for the water bottle. Now, there's also rack-style batteries that you can get, and the rack-style battery will eliminate that problem. So you'll still have open down tube and seat tube on the bike for using the bike in the normal way. It all really depends. There's a lot of shopping around, a lot of comparison you have to do here, and you really have to take a look at what your needs are for the bike and what you're planning on doing with it. I have an old, I call it my antique e-bike, which I got many, 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 many years ago. And back in the days when e-bikes were not anything special at all, and this bike is nothing special at all. As a matter of fact, if you don't remember to keep it on the charger, guess what happens? You run out of juice about halfway into your ride, which is what happened to Fran yesterday, because I rode that bike in to town because it has a rack on the back and you can put panniers on it and you can go shopping with it, so it's kind of a nice thing. So it was a little bit slower ride home, but that's okay. We got most of the way, but not all the way. So that brings you to, you know, battery sizes and range. And oh my God, there's just so much involved here. So let's look at quick stuff like long-term savings. Fuel cost, obviously, is going to be considerably less than putting gasoline in a motorized vehicle. There's no question about that. And you could save, you know, I don't know, $400, $800 a year just in fuel costs. So that's a bonus. If you start using it every day, if you start using it for your transportation, you're certainly going to get a lot more out of it. So that's something to be figured out when you're spending the money on the bike. This is money that you would be possibly spending more on the on gasoline. So, you know, you look at that as a possibility. Of course, you do have to reduce your usage of your car in order for that to work. But anyway, maintenance. Average maintenance on an e-bicycle, it's not a whole lot more than a regular bicycle. So if you do that kind of work yourself, then it's the same cost as what it was when you did it yourself. If you go to the bike shop, you know, you probably have to get a tune-up every year or so just to make sure everything's working good. You may have some additional costs in wheel maintenance because, once again, the added weight on the machine is a little bit harder on the wheels. Health benefits, we don't even need to talk about that. If you're riding on an e-bike, I don't care if you're riding on an e-bike or riding on a regular bike, your health is going to be better than the person that's sitting behind the wheel of that ginormous ginormous car or truck or whatever it is that's going down the road. So obviously the health benefit is definitely there. So it may not, it says here, however, note that an e-bike conversion kit may not work smoothly enough to last you for a very long time. And that's where your professional e-bike conversion comes in. So, you know, you got to look at your upfront cost of a pre-built e-bike versus a kit. And like I said, you can pretty much save close to 50% by converting yourself. But of course, it has to be, you need to buy a quality unit. You got to be real careful about what's out there. You got to be super careful about batteries, making sure that you're getting a battery that is certified so that you don't, burn your house down. Anyway, you want something reliable. You want something that is not a an off-market brand that that may have a great price on it, but maybe doesn't have the same safety equipment inside of the battery. There are exceptions out here, so you got to watch out for that too. But the do-it-yourself kits can be pretty inexpensive, but when you're buying a complete bike and you're getting it from a certified e-bike dealer and someone who is or at a bicycle shop, basically, you're probably going to get something that's got at least some sort of safety and warranty that goes along with it. So you're going to get what you're paying for when you go to do that. Once again, you have to find the shop that's willing to sell you that bike. And there are some bike shops out there that just don't want to talk to you about e-bikes. I don't understand them, but they're out there, and I know they're out there because I have spoken with them. And it's just not a market that they want to dive into. Unfortunately, it is a market that if they don't dive into it soon, they won't be there much longer. But that's just my opinion. And so anyway, the question is, do I do it myself? Well, you know, that it again comes down to a number of things. Are you mechanically able to do it yourself, to buy the parts and put the parts on the bike? That's a big question mark right there. And are you, or do you need to have someone do it for you, which we've discussed already? The real question here is, what kind of bike you're probably trying to convert over. My feeling is, I've got a bike that's very much it's like a cruiser looking type bike. It's got 5 speeds and so it does have some gearing on it. You definitely want some gearing on it, but it's, like I said, it's an antique, so it doesn't go very far or very fast, but it'll do what you need to do. You can get some motors, and I'm looking at mid-drive motors. There's two different types of things you can do. You can do a mid frame motor, which sits down by the bottom bracket on the bike, or you can do a hub motor. And the hub motors are very effective. They work really good. Mostly they are front wheels. Some are rear wheels, but I would say mostly they are front wheels. And they're pretty simple because they just, they just slide right into place for whatever bike you're putting them on. Make sure you order the right size wheel, of course. But that makes it very versatile too, because you could technically move it from one bike to another bike fairly easily. And then there's the mid drives. And the mid drives are a little bit more complicated, and they will give you, they're going to give you, I think, a more direct drive approach to your, you won't, the problem that with the hub motor in the front is that you're putting a lot of weight up in the front of the bike, and it works really good. And I have converted a bike for someone where we put a hub motor on, and it worked just great for what he was doing. It was just absolutely perfect. But the when he evolved into his e-bike world, he evolved into a bottom bracket drive, mid-drive motor. And he said it's a lot smoother, it's a lot stronger also on the wheels. The problem, on the hills, I'm sorry. The problem with the wheel mount one is that it does tend to have a different feel and tends to get slowed down a lot more when climbing hills. So I would say the mid-drive is probably the best option that you have out there if you are looking to convert over a bike. The installation process is, again, there are some things you need to know. There's poor instructions which come with these from every review I've read from people who have purchased a product like this online and tried to do it themselves. They all talk about how horrible the instructions are. They tend to be a conversion of Chinese language to English language, and so sometimes the instructions are a little sketchy, so you gotta be careful of that too. But you know, you'll figure it out if you are mechanically minded. Once again, if you're not mechanically minded, we really shouldn't be having this discussion right now. You should probably be talking to a local bike shop. The conversion process is probably going to take you a few hours to do, and so set aside some time. Don't plan on going for a bike ride that day unless you're, you know, really, really good at this. I would give myself a lot of time, because there are a couple little tricks. You got to put controllers on the bike. You got to put you got to wire the bike properly, and you really want to wire the bike so that it looks really clean, because you don't want wires hanging or dangling anywhere where they can get get hooked on anything and then tear the wire, and now you have no e-bike. So you definitely want to put some time into this thing and make sure that it is going to work well for you. So investing in the kit, I think, is not a bad idea. It is my eventual plan, is to move on and convert another bike over, not the one that I have right now, but convert a different bike over, more of a road type bike, and make that into an e-bike. And I'm thinking that if I'm looking at something that has a decent quality mid-drive motor and a decent range as far as battery goes, and the range, by the way, you can get up to like 70 miles on a big battery. But I'm talking big battery. It's definitely going to have to be fairly large in order to do that. But 70 miles is a long ways to go. And that will get you on a multitude of different rides. And that would be with assistance. And that's not just direct throttle, which I do not recommend anything like that. But anyway, and these things can go up to, you know, 20, 25 miles per hour also. So they're not slow either. So that's another thing you need to look at. It really all depends on what your needs are. If you're a bicycle tourist and you're carrying a lot of extra weight on the bicycle, or you're a commuter and you're using your bike to shop with and you're carrying a lot of extra weight there, these are excellent. They really, really do work well, and they'll get you over the worst of the hills without as much strain as it would be to do it physically yourself. You're still going to have to pedal. You're still going to have to do that for sure. But there's definitely some bonus to this. And, you know, again, it really, really depends on what you're using the bike for more than anything else. We have a couple of guys that ride on our group rides that are riding on e-road bikes and are very, very happy with them. And they switched over to those bikes because they want to continue to ride with us on the group rides. And they have developed some medical issues which make it so that they can't perform as well as they used to on the bike due to the limitations of what the medication that they're on is doing to them. So anyway, I would say that if I was going to do it, I would definitely go with a mid-drive conversion kit. I think they are the best way to go. There's a couple of different brands out there there's Befang, and there's Bosch, and there's Tongsheng, and you can get different kits for different applications. They're all basically the same, with the Bosch kind of being way up on the top as far as cost goes. So once again, you know, it depends on where your budget's at and what you're looking to do. And then they have here a pros and cons overview. The pros, let's see here. Advantages of e-bike kits: cost effective, customization, you can do it any way you want on whatever bike you have. Sustainability, you can align your lifestyle with eco-friendly practices. Conversion kit's kind of a cool way to go. Learning and engagement: installing a conversion kit can be a rewarding do-it-yourself project. Limitations and drawbacks: compatibility issues. Not all kits fit all types of bikes. And that can be a problem when you get your kit in. You may have to make some modifications, and or it just might not work. So you gotta do your homework, study this, and be sure. And if you have the ability to make a phone call or two to someone who is selling these directly online, because that's where you get a lot of these from, then do so. Or go to your local bike shop and see if they have a recommendation, and maybe they can guide you towards a kit that they've installed on other people's bicycles and had great success with. So there's definitely that. There's going to be an aesthetic impact on it that's doesn't look like a regular bike anymore, because you got a big fat battery on the bike, and so that is going to take away from some of the aesthetics on the bike. And also weight distribution, and this is once again why I like the mid drive better than I like the wheel hub drive, because the weight is more centrally located on the bike frame, which is kind of nice. So that's kind of what I got. It's a low cost effective way to get yourself on an e-bike if this is something you're looking to do, and it'll get you to stop driving a motorized vehicle for a couple of days a week. That's a really, really great way to do it. You can go as motors down to 250 watts, and then they can go higher than that depending on how much power you need, how much longevity you need, that sort of thing, how much speed you're looking for. It's all quite available. And anyway, I just wanted to touch base on e-bikes a little bit more today, because I think that they are certainly a thing that we will be discussing more in the future. And let's see here, what is this? I know I had put one more thing.
Ronald, I have a question.
Yes, Fran.
Are you going to talk about Lael Wilcox?
Lael Wilcox.
Yeah.
I don't.
She kind of rode around the world in 108 days, and she made a record.
She rode around the world in 108 days.
She did.
I think that would be a great subject for maybe another episode.
Okay.
And we'll definitely look that up. Yeah, you can set that. You can send that over to me.
Okay.
And I'll talk about it next week.
Okay.
Because that's a pretty outstanding feat, I would say.
And my friend Sherry Edgar, the naturopath, rode with her for a little bit.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it is.
Very, very cool.
Okay, I'll send this to you.
So, yeah, you can do that. That'd be fine. So, let's see here. This is not what I was looking for. Next thing on my list, we're going to go into, so this is an additional comment, which was about the whole, it's additional comment about our problem that we have with the whole 9/11 thing, and the fact that we are just becoming so incredibly dependent upon vehicles that burn fuel or gasoline. And, you know, where does that oil come from? Right now, the United States is producing more oil than anyone else in the world. So a lot of that oil is coming from right here, which is why the price of gas is very, very low right now in this country. Probably the lowest I've seen in quite some time. But you know, what happens is the automobile and our overdependence in automobiles, it fuels a bunch of things: global warming, traffic violence, fueling wars and terrorist attacks. And the Americans literally walk around with tire particles in their bodies. It's not that anyone here at The Streets blog, which is where I got this information, wants to ban cars, but why can't we reduce our dependence on them and make it safe and convenient to walk, bike, and use public transportation? So we've made some progress, but you know, we're not there yet, and we don't need more highways, we don't need more parking, and we don't need bigger cars. All right, so let's see where we can go with that. Well, there's an app for that. There's an app for everything. You ever notice that, Fran? There's like an app for everything.
Yes.
Everything you want to do.
Absolutely.
So this is a kind of a cool thing. And this is a transit app, which is now providing safety-first bike directions. Cool, huh? I thought that was cool. So I checked this out, and I thought it was kind of a neat thing. So a commuter train, subway, bus app is launching an update to allow users to prioritize safe bike routes. But the tech company needs you to help make sure that the information is up to date and accurate. So this company is called Go Bike. It's a Montreal-based company that now allows users to make biking their first mode of transit, showing safer bike routes first and providing multiple bike route options. And it says here, we really wanted to ramp up our biking information in the app, said Stephen Miller, the company's policy lead. Obviously, we are used for public transport, but it means it also means being able to walk and bike to make these type of connections. Because often when people use public transportation, they have to get to the public transportation. I know my son, Greg, walks, you know, 3 or 4 blocks and he's got a bus. Or maybe a little bit longer, maybe up to a half mile and he's on the train and he's in Chicago. So he's in a big city. So you still need to be able to figure out the best way to get there. And safely, hopefully. And so, you know, this is kind of a nifty little app that combines everything. So, for years, biking has been supporting actor within the app, but now its face is on the movie poster. The pandemic and subsequent bike boom exposed to what many advocates already knew, that cycling is a viable, cheaper transit option and a way to get people out of their cars. And many companies are pushing to find ways to make biking safer and more accessible for people. Navigation tools are part of the ecosystem. The companies like Apple and Google have had hiccups and complaints about their navigation apps for cyclists. And while they have made improvements, there's still a pathway for other competitors to create or improve their navigation services for users. I did try to use a Google app once for trying to get somewhere on my bike, and it put me on a main road. And I even clicked the little bike thing on it, and it still put me on a main road, which I would not do. I would not normally do that. I had the misfortune of riding my bicycle on Saturday on a road that years ago, when I used to live down in that part of the state, which is just south of where we are right up here, that road wasn't anywhere near as busy as it was last Saturday. Oh my God, it was like riding on a freeway. It was just ridiculously busy. Good news was, there was a shoulder. Bad news was, there was a shoulder. Shoulders, wide roads with big shoulders tend to attract a lot of cars. And so there were a lot of cars. I saw more cars on Saturday on that bike ride than I've seen on all the bike rides I've done this year. That's how many cars were there. That was a lot of cars. So I'm spoiled. I'm absolutely spoiled, because where we live in a place that you just don't see that many automobiles. If I get out super early in the morning and I'm able to ride my bike up to the community center to teach my class, I may see 5 or 6 cars in 8 miles of travel. So, you know, we're spoiled. I'll admit it. We are totally spoiled here. We have great back roads, a wonderful network of them, and not a lot of people that drive on them. So it just makes life a lot easier. But, you know, what can you do? So part of this app is that it says here, people aren't going to bike if they don't feel there's a safe place to get to work without having a scary or unpleasant experience on a busy road. Right. True. And for others, just general navigation rules for cyclists can make the difference. How do I figure out how to get somewhere? Bike information has been available since 2017 on this transit app, which uses a crowdsourced real-time data. But the information, according to this person, was at the bottom of the list of transit options and didn't offer turn-by-turn directions or even multiple bike options. Now you can click where you want to go and prioritize the speed at which you want to travel and even choose from using your own bike or a bike share app. The app will display a route and their percentage of bike lanes and paths on a journey, then orders them by safety first. So users will get directed to protected bike paths, then bike lanes, then residual streets before the app offers up busy car dominated roads. I like this. This seems really, really cool. I'm going to have to explore this and maybe give you a review on it. It's going to be a little bit harder for me because it's, we don't really live in a busy enough area to make this work well for us right here. But I just clicked onto their site here, and it's just, have you ever found yourself looking for better bike directions? And then they've got an article here. It talks about planning a bike trip with GoBike, features and directions, and it's called GoBike. So get better bike directions. That's the whole idea. And you can kind of customize it as to where you want to go and how you want to do it. And I'm going to download the app and play around with it for a little bit because it seems like kind of a cool idea. When I saw it, I thought it was really kind of a cool idea. So there we are. As we find more and more need for things, there's always an app for it. Seems like the apps are all out there. Apple offers directions that will, take you from protected bike lanes onto 3rd Street Southeast, a residential busy street, but also suggests a left turn onto Massachusetts Avenue. This was in Boston. You don't want to ride your bike on Massachusetts Avenue. Trust me, you do not want to do that. It's crazy up there. It's crazy anyway. Everyone I know who has ridden their bike in Boston has been hit by a car. Everyone I know. Now, it's just the people I know, all right? I'm sure there's more, but it's just complete insanity up there. And why would you want to drive a car around Boston if you know Boston at all? You don't really want to drive a car around Boston. It's kind of a crazy place to drive a car. You can't get anywhere. It takes 2 to 3 times as long to go 3 miles in Boston by car as it does by bike. That's a for real. That is definitely a for real. That comes from personal experience. So anyway, cool app. Let's check it out. I'll take a look at it and see. It's, like I said, it's a Montreal-based company. Transit is the name of the company, and the app is called GoBike. So we'll check that out and see if it really is everything it's cut out to be. Hopefully someone in one of my urban areas can download this and give it a try and have some success with it and let us know. So please write in and let us know how you made out with it. I think it's a really, really cool idea. So what else do we have here? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So now we're going to move on. And I got to talk a little bit about the World Championships because the World Championships are coming up. They're coming up at the end of the month. And there's just a lot of things going on. Tadej Pogačar is, he's in Canada right now racing, and he confirmed his favorite status for the Zurich World Championships with a masterclass in Montreal, and he's going to quickly fly back to Europe for the final 2 weeks of preparation before the Rainbow Chase or the Rainbow Jersey Chase on September 29th, But he was dominating at the Grand Prix Cycliste de Montreal, and he laid down a final ominous marker before he heads off to the Zurich World Championships. He is just, such was his dominance that the Slovenian even had time to high-five the Grand Prix cyclist de Quebec winner and close friend Michael Matthews as he powered up the Avenue du Parc one final time. So he's obviously just riding at a really high level now, and he would like to become the third men's triple crown winner after Stephen Roche and Eddie Merckx. Eddie Merckx in 74 and Stephen Roche in 87. So he wrapped that up very successfully, and the extra motivation there is to become Slovenia's first road race world champion after their previous best as national team being third, though Pogačar in 2023 had, and one of his sports directors, I don't know what that said. I don't understand that. That makes no sense. Anyway, so he said that they gave him a lot of confidence and motivation in his winner's press conference taking place just hours before he'd get back on a plane to Europe to begin the final push to Zurich. So, Tadej Pogačar. I didn't get to watch it, unfortunately, but it would be, I'm sure it's out there somewhere on YouTube. It appears by the photo as he is crossing the line that there is no one in sight of him as he's crossing the line. So it looks like he soloed off. He attacked, oh, here it is, at 23.3 kilometers from the finish. And that was the last I saw of Tadej Pogačar. So just to give you an idea, I guess he's back in form. I know he was real concerned about his form after the Tour de France because he was really tired and he did not do the Olympics, which he was supposed to be in, but he pulled out of the Olympics after the Tour de France and he said it was fatigue that was doing that. We have some suspicion that might be other things out there, but we're going to go with the fatigue. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. So, the 23.3 kilometer point of attack is also key to note with the bell lap of the Zurich road race set to arrive at 26.8 kilometers to go. And a couple of final ascents with 20 kilometers to go. Montreal is kind of the perfect final dress rehearsal for the World Championships. So we'll just have to see what happens. Can't wait. More good bike racing coming up, which is awesome. And I can't wait to see more. So keep your eyes open on good old Tadej Pogačar, the World Championships. So if we go here, and that's not where I wanted to go here. Come on, here it is. I have routes and stages here. So on the 22nd, there will be an individual time trial for the women, which is 29.9 kilometers, and also an individual time trial for the men, which will be 46.1 kilometers. On the 25th, we are looking at team relay, which is kind of interesting. It's mixed team relay, is what it is. And that would be 53.7 kilometers. And then on the 28th, we have the road race for women, which is going to be 154 kilometers. And the road race for men will be on the 29th, which will be 273.9 kilometers. That's a lot of saddle time, I gotta tell you. Yeah, that's serious. So 279, so we're looking at close to 150 miles there, probably, maybe a little more, 160 miles. That's a long road race. But anyway, it's the World Championships. You get to wear the cool jersey all year long when you win the cool jersey. So it's kind of neat, kind of a neat thing. So we will keep our eyes on the Worlds as we get closer to them and see what's going on. I have an update here, which I wanted to bring up. And this is, we had been very, very concerned about the June tariff additions that were originally placed by the Trump administration a number of years back, 4 years ago. And they came to effect in June, and it was a 25% increase on imports. And most of those imports were in the bicycle industry. Well, a lot of them were in the bicycle industry, because a lot of our product that we get here in the United States comes from Asia. So different parts of Asia, but definitely from Asia. And that was definitely a problem. The Biden administration Friday said it will propose new trade rules under executive authority to stop the abuse of de minimis threshold that can allow imports, including e-bikes and lithium-ion batteries, to circumvent safety standards. The proposal of these new rules, allowing the Consumer Product Safety Commission to propose required importers of consumer products to file certificates of compliance and electronically with the Commission and the U.S. Customs and Border Protection at the time of entry, including the de minimis shipments. So this $800 import threshold allows direct-to-consumer retailers, particularly from China, to sell e-bikes and lithium-ion batteries without certificates of compliance. They can be sold well below market cost because no duties, federal, state, or local taxes are paid. Those products can enter the U.S. market bypassing CPSC, Consumer Product Safety Commission, regulations because of offshore retailers that are out of reach of the U.S. government and legal system. Further, those shipments enter the U.S. with less information than other imports and are not subject to duties and taxes. So the regulation would strengthen the CPSC's ability to target and block unsafe products from entering the U.S. market. So this is more involved with, I thought this was more involved with something else, but apparently it's all about the unsafe product that's coming in out of China that you have to watch out for when you're, you know, building your e-bike or whatever it is you might be doing. So the administration intends to propose new rulemaking that will exclude all shipments containing products covered by tariffs imposed under sections, so it's over the Trade Act of 1974, when it gets really complicated. Chinese-made e-bikes, carbon frames, and juvenile bicycles fall under this section. In May, the Biden administration ended what some called a tariff holiday for importers of those products, which have been subject to a 25% Section 301 tariff imposed by the Trump administration, but were excluded from the program. Section 301 tariffs currently cover about 40% of U.S. imports. So the new rulemaking would also enhance enforcement to the those shipments that will propose to strengthen information collection requirements to promote greater visibility into the shipments. Okay, so we'll just have to see what happens here. It's all in the air as far as what your next bike is going to cost, or products to put on your bike is going to cost. If we have an administration change in November, we could be in for a big interruption in great prices on bikes. But I'll just leave it at that. So careful how you vote. I'm not trying to get political here, but do be careful about that. If you're a bike guy like me and enjoy getting things at reasonable prices. So just saying, you know, it's so we'll see what happens with that. And we'll find out a little bit more. I did want to, let's see what here. No, that's, I'm not going to be able to cover that today. We're going to have to pass on that. Another thing that's going on in the bicycle industry is a company that I used to work for 7 years. I worked for a company called Louis Garneau. Louis Garneau is a gentleman who is, he was a world-class racer, and he also started a company that was making bicycle clothing and helmets and shoes and even bicycles. Eventually, he got into other equipment too. We sold, you know, panniers, and we sold bags and lots of things that were all related to bikes. And Louis started out sewing jerseys for the folks up at Onion River Sports in Montpelier, Vermont, when he was going to school and living in an apartment up over the bike shop. That's a long little piece of history from the bicycle world that Ron has been involved with for a long time. So, but Louis Garneau had also expanded, and it was selling not only Garneau, but Segoy and Sombrio. So they have just sold to Loewe Brands, actually, is what it's called. And it's going to be, Louis Garneau is an Olympic cyclist, and his wife, Monique Arsenault, founded Louis Garneau Sports in 1983 in his parents' garage. The company had filed for bankruptcy in 2020, restructuring with the help of a Quebec investment group. Louis Garneau announced on social media this summer that he had left the company. We are proud to join a dynamic and well-respected brand like Loewe, said Jean-Marc Jahoux, the CEO of Louis Garneau Sports. Together, we will continue to innovate and offer high-quality products to athletes and sport enthusiasts around the world. Financial details of the deal are not available or disclosed at a press release. So we don't have any idea about other parties that were involved at this time. So we'll see what happens. I'll keep my eyes on that one because, you know, I still have some Louis Garneau equipment that I'm riding with. I still have jerseys and shorts and other things that I got, even shoes that I have been riding with over the years. So that will be a big change. We'll see what happens there with Louis. And I wonder what Louis is doing these days. I know he spends a lot of time in Florida in the wintertime. He gets in those giant Pelotons down in Florida. Anybody know about those giant Pelotons down in Florida? Yeah, they actually take over the world. They take over the roads. Like, I have heard rumor of anywhere from 50 to 100 riders on a group ride. And people that ride in these groups, and I know a few people that do go down there and do that, they say it's the safest way to ride because they just block traffic completely, and traffic just goes another way. They just figure out a way around them. But to me, it's waving a huge red flag to, hey, look what we're doing. We're obstructing your road, and now you can take your behemoth and just plow into all of us. I don't like the whole idea of that without some sort of a controlled environment. You know, pace cars, following vehicles, etc., would be super helpful to avoid that from happening. But to me, that doesn't seem really safe. We have a ride here in Connecticut, which is, it's out of Sleeping Giant Park, and which is over in Hamden, Connecticut, and they tend to kind of take over the roads, and I've heard all sorts of bad stories from that when you do that. Personally, I like to just go wander off on my little back roads and ride my bike, and I don't care how fast I go because that ship has sailed. I don't go fast anymore. I just ride my bike. I just like to ride my bike, and that's what I do. So, anyway, this is bringing us up to the point where I'm going to have to go into, events because it's time. Remember, the World Championships is coming up September 29th, 2024. The Rocky Hill Cyclocross Training Series is happening this Wednesday night. It will be their last one of the four-week series. So if you are looking to get involved in cyclocross and you're looking for a little bit lower key way of doing it, Wednesday evenings, I think 5 p.m., 6 p.m., right around there is when it is. It's on Bike Reg, so you can sign up there so you can check it all out. And it'll give you some, you know, good introduction to cross. Nothing super difficult there, as I remember, but there's still some challenges for sure. And it gives you that race experience because you get to ride with, you know, other people that are doing cross and going fast with you. Keep in mind the Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series is still on. And remember, we had done last weekend, we had done the initial race, and we did Damned at the Dam last weekend, and this past two weekends ago, September 14th was Pain in the Neck at Haddam Neck in Haddam Neck, Connecticut. September 22nd will be the Hidden Valley Cross in New Haven, Connecticut. October 6th will be Newtown Cross in Newtown, Connecticut. October 20th will be Belltown Throwdown, and that's in Portland, Connecticut.
Belltown Throwdown.
It's my buddies out there at Airline Cycles. We like those guys. They also did the Pain in the Neck this weekend. November 17th is Moran Cross in Wallingford, and December 1st will be Orchard Scorcher in Guilford, Connecticut. So lots more bicycle racing coming up with Project Mayhem. It's a new series this year. We've got 7 races involved in it, and there is an overall prize. And a big shout out to folks like Richard Sachs, who, you know, has helped us out big time and keeping his involvement in cyclocross, which he kind of loves dearly. So it's kind of a cool thing. If you don't know Richard, he's a Connecticut frame builder. So anyway, Lime Rock Park Epic Sunday, October 8th in Lakeville, Connecticut. That's going to be a gravel grinder with a 68-mile course, a 53-mile course, and an 18-mile course. And I think I just got an update that they're also going to throw in a 25. But I'm not 100% sure on that, so don't hold me on it. You'll need to go register to see what that's all about. Finishing points. Why are we not riding our bikes more and using less oil? Why are we driving even bigger vehicles than we had back in the oil crisis day of the 70s? Are we looking for another 9/11? This is the way you do it. Just make the rest of the world angry with us, and that's how it happens. But anyway, let's try to avoid that, and let's hear it for cool new apps. Cool new apps to help you ride your bike and find your way around big cities. I think that's cool. Do you have a favorite app out there you'd like to share with us? I know a lot of people use Ride with GPS. So how about the Worlds? We'll see. We'll see what happens. Will he be back one more time? So 2024, more miles, ride and commute to work or around town, better fitness, or simply enjoying the bike rides you take by slowing down more and stopping and smelling the roses. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride, and ride your bicycle instead. Hey, take a day, park the car or truck, and just ride your bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment right down here below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you want to contribute information, drop me an email. This is Pedal and Run. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!